Have you ever been invited to a party and you realize like you weren't going to know many people there? And so then you like dreaded all the way going up to the event, or you talk yourself out of it so you don't go because it's scary to put yourself out there in a situation that like, what if I don't like them? What if they don't like me? And it feels stressful. Well, I don't want you to feel that way about hanging out in this community, mama. So I am hosting an open house and I want you to come and meet all the mamas so that you know what kind of people we are. P.S. We're great. And that you feel comfortable joining in this community. Because if you are thinking about joining successful mama meetups or thinking about joining the retreat, I want you to know that these are your people. And what better way to do that than to actually meet the people? So come join us at our open house. We are hosting an open house in Successful Mama Meetups on July 26th at both of the meetings. So we have two meetings. You can come to either one and come meet the moms, hang out, see what it's like. Pretty much all the moms who are going on the retreat so far are also part of Successful Mama Meetups. So you'll get the feel for like, who are these people? What's the vibe? Do I want to hang out with them? Yes, you do. It's going to be so fun. So come hang out with us. So it's totally no charge, free. 99, come hang out at Successful Mama Meetups on July 26th, either meeting or come to both. That's totally cool too. Our meetings are twice on Wednesdays if you're on this side of the earth that I'm on. They're at 12:30 Eastern and 9 p.m. Eastern. Or if you're on the other side of the world, then the second meeting actually is your Thursday morning. So if you're in Asia or Australia, it's actually going to be July 27th on Thursday morning. Go over to my website at patriciasung.com/open house. It's all one word, OPENHOUSE. And sign up for the link so that you get the Zoom link for either of the meetings. Remember, this is all virtual, so anybody can come anywhere in the world. See what time it is on your time zone and come join us for either one or both of the meetings. For the first 30 minutes, we hang out and get stuff done. So I have help there for like how to plan your week. Or if you just like, I just need to get some stuff done and the body doubling helps, do that. Like there's no wrong way to show up and do stuff at Successful Mama Meetups. Did you get something done? Great. That's what we're here for. Okay. So that's the first 30 minutes. And then the second 30 minutes is social time where we hang out and we make it fun. You actually want to show up to the body doubling because you get to hang out with your friends and meet people who understand how your brain works and you feel at home. So come join us July 26th at either or both of the meetings. Sign up at patriciasung.com/open house. And I can't wait to see your face. And if you are listening to this after July 26th, still go over to that link and see when the next one is. I think I'm going to do this again. I'll see you then. Okay, on to the episode. Are you overwhelmed by motherhood and barely keeping your head above water? Are you confused and frustrated by how all the other moms make it look so easy? You can't figure out how to manage the chaos in your mind, your home, or your family. I get you, mama. Parenting with ADHD is hard. Here is your permission slip to let go of the Pinterest-worthy visions of organization and structure fit for everyone else. Let's do life like our brains do life. Creatively, lovingly, and with all our might. When we embrace who we are and how our brains work, we can figure out how to live our lives successfully and, in turn, lead our families well. At the end of the day, we just want to be good moms. But, spoiler alert, you are already a great mom. ADHD does not mean you're doomed to be a hot mess, mama. You can rewrite your story from shame spiral to success story. And I'll be right here beside you to cheer you on. Welcome to Motherhood in ADHD. Hey there, Successful Mama. It's your friend, Patricia Sung. Welcome to our summer best of series. Now, over the summer, I'm going to be taking a break to slow down a little bit, hang out more with my kids. Why am I saying slowing down? There is no slowing down. I just have to reshift priorities here. Hanging out with my kids, dealing with all of the construction project that's been going on. It has been a lot this spring, and I realized like I gotta let up this summer in order to be able to do all the things, shifting some stuff around. So I was like, how do I still deliver great content, but also like not just do the same old, because hello, ADHD. So here's what we're doing. I am going to be sharing some friends with you. So while I will sprinkle in a couple of episodes from my own podcast, I chose some of the ones that were like the most popular downloads in the last few months. But I think that they are the most popular downloaded episodes because they cover a lot of the like basic things that we need to know about our ADHD, and we could use a little reminder sometimes of just the basic things. But I'm more excited about introducing you to some of my friends. I have asked several of my podcasting friends to share the interview that I did on their podcast so that you can get to know, not only you still get to hear from me about ADHD and whatever their like podcast is focusing on, but that I want you to be able to meet some other really great podcast hosts. Most of these are women. Most of these are moms who are doing great things in the world. And I love what they're doing. I want to support them. And I want you to have really great podcasts in your feed that are there supporting you and showing you who you can be and like bringing more light and wonderfulness and fun to your summer as you are doing your mom thing and trying to juggle all the things. So welcome to the Best Of series. And let's dive into today's episode. Today, I'd like you to meet my friend, Christina Crow. Christina is a Canadian registered psychotherapist and a clinical supervisor, and she works with people with ADHD all the time. And turns out she is also an ADHD mom herself. I love how Christina is like fearless and relentless in the way that she provides strong, research-backed information about ADHD. Like, she knows her stuff and she shares it. She is out here making sure that quality information is shared, which is something we need more of. Her podcast is all about talking about mental health and making the invisible visible so that we're really talking about what matters. Now, be sure to go back and listen to episode 143 because Christina helped kick off our medication series that runs in the 140s, which our discussion was all about like, should you take medicine? Like, what do you consider going in order to make that decision? How do you figure out what the right decision is for you? It was a really good conversation around medication for ADHD. But today, I'm sharing the conversation that I had with Christina on her podcast, where we talked about what ADHD moms need to know. So be sure to subscribe to the Christina Crow podcast, Making the Invisible Visible. And let's dive into our conversation with Christina.
How many of us have been told that if we got good grades or we finished university, we couldn't possibly have ADHD? Today, I am talking to a super cool ADHD coach from the US who got really great grades. And guess what? She's also got ADHD. She talks about her journey with us, talks about the closet ADHD years. I love that. Everyone knows exactly what that means instinctively, I think. And we talk a little bit about a lot of the things that moms with ADHD could consider giving themselves permission to do differently. Listen in. I hope you guys really enjoy this one and look forward to everybody's feedback. Welcome to the Christina Crow Podcast, Making the Invisible Visible. I'm your host, Christina Crow. I'm a psychotherapist and a relentless mental health advocate in Ontario, Canada. I'm bringing you my clinical insights and research-based facts on modern mental health, and I'm going to bring you the experts I rely on to share their wisdom with you. Let's do it, guys. Let's dig a little deeper and make invisible things visible. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Christina Crow Podcast, where we connect the dots and search for more balanced mental health. Today, we are making invisible thing visible for moms who are struggling to come to terms with and manage their own symptoms of ADHD. I'm talking to Patricia Sung, a transplanted Midwesterner offering compassion and strategies that really do work, helping other parents navigate an area that clearly does not have enough support out there. Patricia Sung helps moms with ADHD get their crap together, one step at a time, and feel confident running their family life. After years of serial entrepreneurship and teaching middle school, She has a uniquely practical perspective on strategies for building a life that works when your brain is different. If you're looking for more than theoretical textbook advice, Patricia teaches from a unique viewpoint from her years of effective application in the classroom, as well as her own life. She shares heartfelt truth and painful struggles through her podcast, Motherhood and ADHD, that I was on last week, and in order to be a lighthouse for mamas who have ADHD. An introverted Midwesterner at heart, Patricia has adopted the word y'all and resides in Houston, Texas, along with her two young boys and extroverted non-ADHD husband. Welcome to the show, Patricia. Thank you so much for making the time to come today.
Thanks for having me.
For sure. So one of the things I really wanted to talk about with you today, after getting to know you via our social media friendship, thank you so much for initiating that a while back and being on your own podcast, which was a lot of fun for me. You know, one of the things that's been really nice about being able to connect with other people, helping people through the journey of ADHD online, is learning about everyone's amazing backgrounds. And so when I learned about you, I mean, maybe why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience? So I'll say one of the things that stood out to me that a lot of the people that I work with would really identify with is that as a fellow late diagnosed person, you were that kid who had great grades. You had good grades. Do people with good grades have ADHD?
Ooh, if I had a dollar every time I heard that one. Yeah, I was. I was the kid who was in on the honor roll, National Honor Society. I went to college on an academic scholarship. So like I did pretty good. I mean, not to sound braggy, but I did pretty great. And I didn't realize though the unusualness of how I accomplished that, how much of it was just me absorbing as I went and being able to apply that knowledge and yet really struggling when we moved from read this book, answer the questions, do this problem, do it again on the test. Whereas like we started shifting into later high school where it became a lot more lecture style from the teacher and they were not following the book. And all of a sudden these classes where I had to absorb everything auditorially, is that a word? Auditorily? Auditory? Auditorily? I might have just made that up.
Auditory way. Yeah.
All of a sudden, that was really difficult for me. And there was a lot of these like weird idiosyncrasies that like I didn't know as a kid that that was strange that other people did. Like I didn't realize how much I was like daydreaming. I called it daydreaming when I was reading and like circling back and being, oh, I missed that. I'm like rereading it. Or, you know, where I had no problem diving into a book and I would read for hours and hours. I loved reading. So I never assumed that there was a struggle there with a learning issue. Because it turns out I actually have Erlen syndrome as well, which is a visual processing disorder. Like all these pieces just like didn't line up. But yet because I did fine, actually I did pretty great, no one noticed. And then when I got to college is when it just all fell apart. And that's usually when you see women getting diagnosed is either at big hormonal shifts like puberty, pregnancy, menopause, or big life shifts like moving from middle school to high school to college, starting a job that's very different. Those are the places where we see a lot of us fall apart because all the coping mechanisms we had up to that point didn't fit. So when I got to college and I was responsible for getting up every day and going to class at 9 a.m. when I am not a morning person. And I had to listen to the professors and read the book and then try to pull all that that gigantic amount of information together for a test that was only maybe 10% of the information that I took in. That's where things started to fall apart. And that's when I got diagnosed when I was, what year is that? So it was my second half of my freshman year that I got diagnosed. Okay. And now I got off on that story and I don't even remember what the question was.
No, you answered that kind of perfectly. And I think there's probably a lot of people listening that are saying, oh my gosh, you know, there's a couple of things that you said that I kind of want to circle back to. And the one thing that's kind of salient is exactly that, is there's a lot of young people who, if we kind of think about learning how to get a good mark at school or good grade, is about learning how to play the game, for lack of maybe a better way to describe it. There's a rubric, there's a syllabus, we know exactly, we figure out pretty quick, especially us girls and women, how we're socialized, what the person wants who will evaluate us, whether it's your teacher or the guys or your girlfriends or all the other people. That's kind of really how, you know, women are socialized. So we can do that. When you have to decide what's important, synthesize a ton of information, prioritize what will probably be on the test versus the other things that won't be on the test that are interesting to you, like that's those rabbit holes that we go down. And then it takes our focus off of the main things, or just how hard it is to figure out what the main thing might be. Those are all those like executive dysfunction pieces that really go hand in hand with ADHD. And when you're really bright and kind of a driven, high achieving person as well, whatever is driving that, whether it's like high intelligence or, you know, some people it's perfectionism, all kinds of other things. It could be standards from home, all that stuff. You can go a really long way and be completely under the radar, because that seems to be the measurement of whether your kid's okay, is if their grades are okay. People often will say, well, they're doing well in school, so they must be fine. And I don't know when that one and one started equaling two, but it doesn't equal two very often, right? The other thing I want to say is, so you're in the United States and I'm in Canada, and in Ontario specifically here. And what I notice is, you know, our elementary school system is actually fairly supportive. So kids who can kind of fly under the radar and get by, excuse me, and especially girls, because they're not the ones causing problems for their teachers, right? They're the daydreamy ones. So the teacher might not actually know how focused that girl might be in class, but she's certainly not causing the teacher a problem. But the high school hasn't changed since we were in high school here. So it's like, you know, the wheels fall off in the ninth grade, grade nine. We say grade nine here. We say the grade before the number here. And that's when everyone's like, girls will start to suddenly feel like, oh, like people are talking about me, or oh, that girl looked at me and she must be thinking something about me. And the second guessing comes in. And I couldn't pay attention in class, and there's so much going on and I'm really overwhelmed. But the supports that they relied on a lot involuntarily slip away. And even at home, like if parents were even more supportive at home, because, you know, your kid was younger, and in high school, there is an expectation that you will self-advocate, that you will start to figure it out, that you will start to take care of yourself. And then when the kids really kind of feel like they're kind of drowning under the pressure of that, of course, then the anxiety creeps in, then the sadness creeps in, then, you know, there's bullying stuff that creeps in and problems with social friendships. So we can start to see how this starts to progress in young women. And if you previously got a lot of identity from getting good grades and that made you feel good, because that maybe that meant you were okay, then it makes sense then that that would be the thing that you would put all of your energy into focusing on. And that would be the thing that would become most important. And so there's an inordinate amount of pressure on yourself to perform, because that now is now your only signal that you're okay. So I see lots of women who come to me as adults, and we talk about the whole question about your report cards. I think sometimes is more about teacher comments than the actual grades. But the thing about grades I'm interested in, so I'm not a diagnostician, to be clear, but I do assess and recommend people to go for diagnosis. So the thing that I'm interested in, because some people will say, well, you know, I had like a B plus average, I was doing okay. And I'm like, I don't care about your average. I want to know the point spread. I want you to tell me the marks that you got that were really great, but I want to hear about the couple that were like total dumpster fires. What happened there? I want that story. Why'd you pick that class? Well, and the randomness of those things is always like a bit of an ADHD indicator. If something terrible happened in your life, you lost a grandparent, something really awful happened, then that explains it away. Then I'm less concerned. You know what I mean? So the context around these things always matter.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that. Cause like when you, okay, I was on honor roll and I had an academic scholarship, but when you look at my, like actually dig into the grades and you look at my midterm test scores, It would be like C plus D, because getting into that test and trying to recall all the stuff was really difficult, but I had A's everywhere else. So it averaged out to be okay, because that test only counted for like 5% of your grade or something, and 10%. But it's so frustrating when people look at report cards and they just look at the surface and the numbers and that's it. They don't dig in. And it really is about the teacher comments. It's about the point spread, like you said, from low to high. And most people will just look and be like, oh, well, you had A's and B's.
But everybody's a bad class every now and then, right?
Right. Let's be honest. We do tend to be trauma survivors. And so, you know, you hit one of these like explainable trauma things that you're like, oh, well, it makes sense that, you know, you lost your grandma that year and your grades took a dive. But it's like, would that have still happened even if your grandma hadn't died? Like, would you still have had those problems? Like, it's such a layered problem.
It's less about the achievements of our lives and more about the peaks and valleys between the achievements and the inexplicable dumpster fires, right? The things that come up and take you by surprise. And you're just kind of like, how did I get here, man? Like, when you were in that moment on the bathroom floor, this does not make sense. That's when it's kind of like, oh, let's talk about, that's a great question. How did you get here, right?
The oxymoron of it, of where we are sitting at both ends of the spectrum at the same time, that is one of the biggest red flags to me when you're looking at ADHD, because you are I was the girl who could sit and read a book from cover to cover for 4 hours straight and not look up. And I was also the girl who struggled to read her biology book and absorb the information. And we live at the two ends of the spectrum. And so it's easy to explain, you know, especially even if when you look at kids, they're like, well, he can sit there and play video games for hours. Yes. So he's on one end of the spectrum in attention. And then also at the other end of the spectrum in attention. And that ability to be at both ends is where the red flags to me really show up.
When you look back on your time as a teacher, were you hip to ADHD during that teaching time or after?
I had already been diagnosed, but I call it my closet ADHD years, where I didn't tell anybody and I hid it.
Lots of people have that.
And I covered it up and pretended like everything was fine. So while I knew, I had not yet started the journey of like really diving in to understand it. I knew a pretty good amount. But then when I was teaching and I got gifted and talented certified, I don't know if you have that in Canada.
Gifted.
And there's a lot of correlation between kids with ADHD and the GD program. And I was just sitting there like listening to them describe the GT kids. And I'm like, oh, that sounds familiar. ADHD problem. Like both, like all the adjectives, like 90% of them also fit kids with ADHD. And I was like, man, I really got to dig into this. And that's when I started getting into understanding it so much more, was when I was teaching. But just knowing that how my brain worked, and, you know, we have kind of this like sixth sense for picking out our people. We know who they are. Even if we don't know, we know who they are. Like, we kind of like are attracted to them. I was able to really speak into the kids who were struggling with different ways of learning and scaffolding them in another way that other teachers would be like, why on earth would you do that? And I'd be like, no, it's going to be great. It's going to work. And I got some interesting stares.
Oh, you've been such a breath of fresh air for those kids.
And I feel like I was like, that is the gifting of ADHD, is our creativity and how we can find we can problem solve in ways that other people don't even see outside the box, and we can pull the box apart, flip it on its side, reconstruct it, make it a pyramid. And that is, I think, one of the things I look back most fondly on my teaching career, was knowing that I was able to speak into kids' lives who were written off.
This intuitive knowing and understanding both of yourself, that inner peace that's in there, So before diagnosis, like knowing that there's a you on the inside and a you on the outside that other people see without actually maybe even being able to articulate that. But in those moments when you're connecting like that, it's the you and the inside that's connecting, which is what makes it feel so like synergistic and lovely in that moment. So knowing it's nice to think that you can look back over your life if you're grappling with an adult diagnosis and looking back, because it's really easy just to look at all the bad stuff, and diagnosis makes it so, because they dredge up all the bad stuff that we conveniently forget. Like part of the protective factor I say often is when I'm like mad about something, I often forget why I was mad in the first place. The feeling lingers with me, but the logic intellectually and cognitively totally escapes me after a period of time, which is protective in the sense that I can kind of just get on with it and get on to the next thing that I'm interested in. But this piece that you can look back and remember all the good things too. And the moments where ADHD probably saved your butt a lot. And we forget that, right? And so I really appreciate the medication awareness and the taking medication stuff that you do, because one of the things that I like to say to people is that when you make a decision to take medication, a lot of parents are afraid of giving medication to their kids because they think it's going to somehow change their personality. My kid's like this quirky, weird, funny kind of kid. I don't like, they're unique. I don't really want to change that. I'm like, it won't. It doesn't change who you are. But
and the minute it does, you need to like throw up a red flag and get some help, because the minute that happens, that's the problem.
Yeah. But what it's meant to do is like reveal more of who you are, because what it's going to do is treat things that are symptomatic. So if it's treating something that's symptomatic, that wasn't your personality. That was something that was getting into trouble ultimately. So we want to treat that stuff so that you're free to kind of figure out what's underneath it all. And that unfolding, that peeling back the layers of that onion when you get to work with adults long term is such a wonderful privilege to be able to watch that unfold in people. I love it. It's incredible the transformations that some people make over time. It's really a beautiful thing. What are the things that you see in the people that you work with? Because there's all these different, ADHD is so different in different presentations and people. And so in my mind, sometimes I have all these like pockets of people and the way it affects them in different ways. And then it helps me kind of figure out, okay, like where am I going to start from? And then I adapt everything according to the person that's right in front of me. And you know, you fall into this, I think, kind of like this pattern of high performing person and driven by lots of different things. And that's a different approach than some other issues that some people have had. So what are some of the big problems that people come to you with that you end up helping with over time? If you or your child was given a diagnosis of ADHD, but then not really told what it means, or how it might change throughout their life. Maybe you've been given a prescription for medication, but not had the opportunity to engage in the rest of recommended treatment, either ADHD adaptive therapy or ADHD coaching. Maybe you've known since you were a kid that you have ADHD, but the early attempts at treatment didn't go so well. Maybe you're a parent who's worried about making the right choices for your kid regarding medication. If there's gaps in the information that you think you were supposed to have gotten, then this is the course for you. DIY ADHD is a self-paced online course created by yours truly, Christina Crow, a registered psychotherapist in Ontario, Canada. You'll get all of the foundational information to fill in all the knowledge gaps you might not even know you have. Reclaim your life. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about this resource, decide whether or not it's for you, and if you move forward, use the promo code CCPODCAST for 15% off.
Mama, are you ready to get away? You are cordially invited to this year's annual retreat. Our Successful as a Mother luxury weekend getaway retreat conference amazingness that is happening this October. This is a chance for you to get away and take a break and truly rest for you to learn about your brain in a way that makes sense for you. And most importantly, know that you are not alone and have a real life community of moms who get you. We are staying at a beautiful 4-star hotel. This is an all-inclusive event, which means I will handle everything for you once you arrive. I take care of your hotel. I take care of your meals that you neither cooked nor cleaned up, nor cut anybody else's food up, that you truly get to have a weekend where you take care of you, because you deserve rest. You deserve to be taken care of. And I'm going to do that for you at this retreat. So I invite you to go ahead and grab your ticket at patriciasung.com/ADHD-mom-retreat. Again, that's patriciasung.com/ADHD-mom-retreat. Grab your ticket and let's hang out in person. I cannot wait to meet you.
Oh, where do we start? I was like, we have so many problems.
You focus on moms. I mean, your whole thing is about helping moms.
So I specifically work with moms because honestly, I thought I was always going to work with kids because I was a teacher. That makes sense, right? But I found that working with moms, I'm now like helping the entire family. Because when mom is well and when mom has skills, she's teaching those to her family. And I feel like that's where I can make the most impact in where we are now and for generations is to get the moms set up. So where I see us struggling the most is one, all the other diagnoses that come along with ADHD. So usually before you got into a diagnosis of ADHD, there's been some kind of like anxiety or depression or postpartum anxiety, depression or chronic fatigue or bipolar that comes with the PMDD. It's like all those other pieces have been treated first or ignored first, either one. And that means that people feel very unsuccessful. Because they've been doing all these things for their problems and not getting as far as they quote unquote should.
Well said, Patricia. That is really well said. So they're coming to, because we find that too. Bravo. That's going to be a piece I'm going to highlight. You know, with private psychotherapy, I am not the first person people are telling these problems to, you know, in some way or another. People have voiced the conflicts and the challenges in their life, like the repetitive ones that come up time and time again to their family doctor, to their best friend, to their partner, to their hairdresser, to their mom, to their siblings for a long time.
Yep. And everyone says, well, you look fine.
Yeah. And then to your point, if you've had anxiety either by itself in addition to ADHD or caused from living with undiagnosed ADHD, because we know that's a natural progression, you know, and that's been treated and maybe you got some benefit, but at the end of the day, it's still there. And then people kind of come to me and they're like, well, I'm just an anxious person you're a human. So all humans are anxious. Like, what exactly do you mean by that? Right. You're not like a mentally ill person by nature of who you are. We need to figure out what's going on here. And if you haven't been getting better, it's not because you're not doing well. It's because we're treating the wrong thing, maybe. Because patients don't fail treatments. Treatments fail patients. It's really important for anyone out there that's been struggling for a long time to consider the idea that it's actually not them. We haven't been looking under the wrong, we've been looking under the wrong rock, or we haven't found the right rock to look underneath. Yeah, right. So people come and then it's almost like sometimes it's obvious right away. Sometimes people come saying, I think I have ADHD. Sometimes I'm actually working with someone for a while and it even takes me by surprise. With, you know, not very often, but sometimes it happens. I'm like, you know, I think it might actually be this. And it's one of those things where it just makes so much sense and everything lights up. Someone can be like a textbook case even, and they're so frightened to believe that we might have finally figured it out. Because they've been here before, right? And that fear that we could actually be free of all this crap that's been holding us back is like enough to keep people from moving forward for a long time until they're ready. And so I just, you did a great job describing that. It's the same thing we see.
Yeah, and I like to use the analogy of a tree where if your root cause is the ADHD and you're busy over here pruning the anxiety branch and you're pruning the chronic fatigue branch and you're over here and you're doing lots of stuff and you're pruning all the branches, but yet you've never addressed the root, you're never going to have a healthy tree because you're just over here pruning and you're not addressing the main cause. Not to say that you shouldn't do those things, but those are part of a bigger picture that we need to address the root first. When we dig into the ADHD and we have healthy roots and we have lots of nutrients and water, we're doing well down here, then we can go up and start addressing all the pruning and making the tree look good.
That's a good visual. Did you ever, I might be dating myself here, when you were a kid, did you watch the Flintstones?
Yes.
So, you know, like,
actually, I would say I'm probably not that much younger than you.
Well, when, you know, when Fred's in the car and there's no, for all the people who are younger, who are like, who are the Flintstones? They're like the Stone Age family. And they, the funny thing is that they had these stone cars they put together with no bottom, obviously, because there's no engines back then and the wheels were squares. So the, like Fred's little feet and Barney's little feet were running and that's how they made the car go. And that's what it's like to be a mom with ADHD. It's like, if you just look at the highway, all the cars are going at the same pace. But when you look closely at Fred and Barney's car, their feet are running so fast under the surface to just keep up with everybody else who happens to be in a regular car with gas.
You know? Or a Tesla.
Yeah.
And you're over here pedaling with your toes.
Yeah. And so it just becomes this thing is like, you're used to just going and maybe wondering, is it supposed to be this exhausting? Is it supposed to be this hard to just like function? Why is it this hard? Is it really supposed to be this hard? You know what I mean? Some stuff is just really hard. The pandemic, obviously, and pandemic fatigue and all of the things that have come with the past couple of years, of course, make it all harder. So we're not talking about things that you might've felt just in the past 2 years. Like, this is lifelong stuff we trace back. And it wasn't always there. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. And the variance is usually the external stressors in your life. So at a time in your life when a lot of external things were controlled for and you didn't have a lot on your plate and other people were helping you out and you had a routine, you wouldn't be as symptomatic. But when all of those things go away, you become much more symptomatic. So, you know, I find, for example, kids who have a parent that was a teacher, they flew under the radar because their teacher parent was very structured at home. Can't help but be structured at home when you're trained as a teacher, right? So when those kids go off to university, they don't have their teacher mom or dad suddenly creating order in their life and that everything falls apart. Or kids who played really competitive sports all the way through school, and they have the camaraderie and structure and routine and physical exertion of sport. And when they stop playing sports, like, there's interesting studies that show that ADHD is overrepresented in Olympic and elite athletes. And then it gets revealed when they come out of whatever level of competitive sport that is. You know, it's very interesting.
Well, I find it fascinating, and I haven't really dug into this yet. I'm like, this is one of my like rabbit holes that I'm like, it's just waiting there, lurking. I'm going to get there at some point. But I find it fascinating, like what you said, where you have students who have been very involved in athletics or had a teacher or very structured parent at home, where you were doing well and all those coping mechanisms were serving you well. And then when you leave, somehow we don't absorb those skills to replicate them on our own when we're by ourselves. And it's one of those things I'm like, I really want to like sit and just like pull this apart because I'm like, I know there's going to be some good stuff when I like untangle this, but it like, that's how I was. I'm just fascinated by like, I did so well when I had all that support. And yet somehow, even though I had all of this support modeled, I hadn't taken it on and learned how to execute it myself. So that when I showed up in college, I didn't know how to create those systems.
You didn't need to learn
myself.
It was being done right for you.
Everything was done for me. But right, you would think that in seeing all that, we would know what to do, but we don't.
Oh, we know what to do. We don't have practice in the execution of it, which is a different feat of cognitive function.
We know people with ADHD know all the things to do. That's why they feel so bad about themselves. If they didn't know, we wouldn't have a problem.
Yeah. Well, but when you're watching someone else,
when you're upset about it, that you can't.
Yeah, and when you're watching someone else do it so effortlessly, and then you are like, "But how do I do it with the way that I think?" And you don't realize that you need to do it in a different way for your brain. Like, this is where we have that disconnect between. I feel like I should know what I should do because everyone showed me what to do, but yet somehow when I got to do it myself.
It's the consistency piece, right? The consistency. Because whether it's effortless or not for the other person, because like I always think of like keeping a consistent exercise routine is the last thing on my to-do list. I do not know how people do something like go to the gym 4 times a week for like years. Right? Because I can do that like nobody's business for like 4 months. And then I will not go for 6 years.
Yeah, there's so definitely a time clock.
Consistency of it. It's just the, so to me, the effortless piece comes in with like, you can just keep doing it. Like you don't need to stop and do something else because you got bored and like balance it or jiggle it. You don't get overwhelmed with something. Like it's all of that stuff. On that note, for any of the moms who have ADHD that are listening, who are struggling to keep up, who maybe have just found out, or they're just unpacking it, because to me, unpacking this diagnosis is like a 2-3 year journey. Like it's not something that happens in a couple of weeks or 6 months or even, you know, because it means something different. Every new level that you get to of understanding, you're both yourself and what ADHD really means. What do moms with ADHD need to do differently in your experience? Or give themselves permission to do differently, maybe.
I think that, like, I was like thinking back to your earlier question of like, what else do I see? Like, this is the other big red flag I see is that we are so overwhelmed and so burnt out that we want to do something different, but we don't even know where to start. And you hit that like freeze mode of, I don't know what to do now. And we just like, we're frozen. We don't know what to do. And for me, it's a 3-step process. Is that one is learn about your brain, learn about ADHD by itself, but then also how your ADHD shows up because everyone's ADHD is different. It's kind of like when you ask an Italian grandma how you make the pasta sauce. Yes, 10 grandmas are going to all tell you you need tomatoes, but then they're going to give you a whole bunch of different recipes. They all turn out as pasta sauce, but they're all very different. And that's how your ADHD is going to show up for you. Very different. With a lot of the same themes as the person next to you. So you can't learn everything by knowing one person with ADHD. So that's step one, is really understanding how your brain works. The second one is taking care of yourself. You got to put on your oxygen mask first, like they tell you in the airplane. And you have to be in a healthier state. Maybe being in a healthy state sounds like too big of a stretch, but in a healthier state, because when you take care of yourself, then you can. You have the capacity for taking care of other people, which as moms, we're like, that's not even possible. What? Huh? But it is, it's a vital part of the process. And then the third part is asking for help and getting support because the way that we're going to do things is different than how everyone else is going to do them. And we're going to need our village there with us. And whether that is the village that we were born with, whether we find those friends, whether we have to pay for a village, whatever it is that we need to do to create the support and the help that we need, we can't do it by ourselves because like you said, we know what to do, but we don't know how to get there. And like, that's the whole reason I started teaching courses because like, I just started the podcast as a hobby. I wasn't ever planning on making this into a business. I did not foresee this plan coming at all. Where I watched all these moms who were like, okay, like I get this now, but like, what do I do? What do we do now? And that's where like the whole process of teaching moms, like how to use their calendar, how do you actually prioritize things? Cause our brain doesn't do that for us automatically. How do we figure out a rhythm, like a daily routine that makes sense for ourselves that we're not going to get bored of 3 weeks later and make sense for our family, but like, oh, look, my kid is in a new stage. Now it's got to be different. I got to adjust it. Learning all those skills to fit how we function is a skill set that can be learned. but not if you're on Pinterest Googling church arts. That's not where you're going to find the information you need. I love Pinterest, don't get me wrong. But I shouldn't get on my sticker chart soapbox here.
There's a role for all of that stuff, but it's got to be rolled out and executed in a totally different way because family life has to shift, right? So we stop doing things the way our friends are doing them and the neighbors have done them and our cousins and our aunts are doing them. We have to start doing them the way that makes sense for us and give ourselves permission to make new rules that make sense for our family. It's a really big thing. One of the things that you hit on that also, I think myself and all of my colleagues up here run into that's really common is while we know we should ask for help and we know that it's normal to ask for help and we know that everyone's telling us we should ask for help, it's really hard to ask for help. And what does that sound like, especially if that is the one thing we're very unpracticed at doing because our whole lives, maybe we would have figured this out as kids if someone actually helped us. But a lot of us weren't helped as kids. And then if you're in that high performing group, you didn't seem like you needed help. So nobody thought, check. You seemed fine. So I didn't really think you needed help. You know, you were fine. People will even go so far as to say they'll override your own internal experience and tell you that you were fine, you know, even though you knew very well you weren't fine because nobody asked. And so a lot of us were left to our own, you know, to fend for ourselves, to figure things out for ourselves. You know, on the one hand, there's resilience that came from that. And a lot of us are pretty wily and a lot of us can figure things out. There's lots of jokes about Gen X and the feral generation on, you know, on TikTok, right? Those kids make fun of us. I'm a Gen Xer. but yeah, we are kind of a feral generation and figure things out. But, you know, that's why we also needed a ton of therapy, you know, at this stage of the game, because, you know, we should have asked for help a lot sooner, you know? How do you work through that with people or do you?
Well, I mean, if they're talking to me, they started at least some part of asking for help. And I mean, this is something that I personally am still working through because, you know, we touched a little bit of this, like when we did our Instagram live, is that we've had this whole life where people told us a different perception of what we perceived. And so we started to think that our perception was wrong. And I see that as a pretty big theme within women with ADHD is that we just doubt ourselves. We don't trust our own gut. Even though our gut is actually spectacularly accurate, we've learned to ignore it or think it's not right. And part of that process is not asking for help because we were supposed to be fine. So you don't need for help. So this is a skill that we have to practice and like being okay with being bad at it before we get good at it. So in a very practical sense, one of the things we talk about is in my time management course is we look at, okay, what are the things that you really hate doing? Can you give those jobs to somebody else? Can you teach your kids how to unload the dishwasher if you hate unloading the dishwasher? Can you trade responsibilities with your partner so that there are more things that each of you like to do? Because a lot of times we just like somehow like accumulate responsibilities and there's never been a discussion about who does what. It's just all of a sudden you're doing a lot of things you didn't realize how you ended up doing them. So to have that actual discussion and be like, okay, I hate laundry. Does this really have to be my job? Can someone else in the family take it? Can we pay for a laundry service? Can we like come up with a new system? When you actually look at the things that you're doing, what you don't enjoy or are terrible at, and then start to figure out where are the ways where I can get this thing off my plate, that's a great starting point. Because for a lot of us moms, we don't even realize how many things we are doing. Because we go all day doing lots of things and we get to the end and we're like, I don't even know what I did today. But when you write it down on a piece of paper, you're like, oh, how do I do all these things?
I know for sure there's some moms listening right now that are like, well, I don't like the way my kid unpacks the dishwasher, loads it, or I don't like the way they do my laundry. That's why I do it. And I would just submit for evidence that if you're kind of hanging on to really rigid ways of doing things that put a lot of extra things on your plate, you know what I'm going to say here, right? Like, you're not doing yourself any favors. However, if you have ADHD, that is actually a symptom of executive dysfunction in the section that we talk about black and white thinking or rigid, concrete, inflexible thinking. And it is a feat of executive function to become a more flexible thinker. So starting to consider, Patricia, just in the way you described it, what if, and maybe, and can I, and perhaps, and just being able to think about things in a different way and allowing yourself some space to just consider things differently. Like, sometimes I don't ask people to do anything. I'm like, I just want to be able to talk about it. Sometimes people are so afraid that if we talk about it, that means something is going to happen. And it's like, no, we can just talk about it. You can feel things and not do anything as a result of your feeling or your emotion that comes up, right? So emotion comes up and that's normal. And maybe we avoid something, but maybe we don't have to. So that it doesn't have to direct what we do. You actually get to stop and think. And stopping to think is the thing that's hard with ADHD. So you can train your brain to do some stuff with or without medication. There comes a point when if your brain does not turn off at any point, like if you don't know what it's like to experience, you know how sometimes when you look at someone and you're like, what are you thinking about? And they're like, nothing. And they actually mean nothing. And it's just unfathomable how someone could be thinking of nothing. That, if you've never had times when you've been actually thinking of nothing, you don't know what that's like. All the moms are laughing right now. Then, you know, maybe it's worth looking into if this is something that's been plaguing you since childhood, really, right? Because you deserve some peace and you deserve to be able to start to think about things differently. Because as an adult, you're in charge of your life. No one else, right? Pinterest is not the boss of me. Why am I letting it be the boss of me, right? My kids are not the boss of me. My partner is not the boss of me. My boss is not even the boss of me. You know, like, how am I actually living my life with me deciding what gets done in a day, not the X number of fires being lit in front of me that I feel like it's my job to put all of them out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will offer this, like, when you are afraid to let something go, one, that could be a coping mechanism that served you really well at some point, but possibly isn't serving you right now. Two, I like to weigh the difference between not having to do this thing and having to look at it done poorly for a little while. What's more important? And for some people, that's going to drive them bonkers that it's not done in a certain way. So it's like, okay, yes, that is very hard for me. Like, I fully own the anal retentive adjective. I know that's how I am. But yet, number three, a lot of these things are skills that our kids need to learn to be functioning grownups. So as hard as it is to watch your kid put away the dishes wrong, they need to learn that skill so that they can be an adult who hopefully one day puts away their dishes and doesn't live on paper plates. So how can we turn this around and say, okay, this is part of me being a quote unquote good mom. This is part of my job, is teaching my kids how to do these skills. So I'm going to be very uncomfortable right now, but I'm going to use this as a way to teach them how to be successful adults. And like, it's a whole process. I was like, I won't get into, but like,
modeling for our kids how to be uncomfortable and not let that take you down is like, hands down, an essential parenting thing to do at some point.
So they need to see you be uncomfortable and they need to see you put away dishes and be okay with how it is. And it's all like, I have learned too, like, it's okay for me to say like, okay, this is really hard for me. I'm very frustrated right now. And just talk my feelings out loud not in an accusatory tone, but like, just, I am frustrated right now and I need a minute with this. Or I really like having the dishes put away a certain way. but teaching you is more important than me putting them away a certain way. And like literally saying that out loud, because sometimes our kids need to hear that it's okay. Like, even though we're frustrated and grumpy, like it's okay because like the mistakes are part of the process, and allowing them that room to do it incorrectly so that they can learn, and that it's okay that they did it badly in order to get there.
I think narrating what's going on for yourself is actually a wonderful tactic to strengthen a mindfulness training practice for yourself. Because sometimes I tell people, like, pretend you're in your own reality TV show. You know, if you're in your kitchen, there's a camera up in the corner kind of watching you. The camera's you, obviously. And you're becoming the observer of yourself. That really strengthens that mindfulness muscle, that ability to self-reflect. It makes you present in the moment, which strengthens your working memory, which allows you to have more memory. Like, a lot of us don't remember a lot of stuff. And it might be because of trauma, but it might just be because of ADHD, right? Because when we're zoning out of things, TV shows, conversations, all that kind of stuff, we're not laying down memory tracks for long-term memory. Right? That's one of those big gaps in the memory of a lot of us. But thank you so much for all of this, because there were so many little gems in here that I really appreciate. Where can moms find you? Tell us about, like, you had mentioned a couple of courses, all of the stuff that you offer, and I'll make sure I link it all in the show notes.
Yeah. So everything I do is under the same name for ADHD friendliness. It's Motherhood in ADHD. So that's the name of the podcast. I say Christina was episode 143, I think. So there's a ton of content there to binge and learn about your brain and figure out how it works and strategies and encouragement. The same thing, like, my Facebook group is named that. So if you are a Facebooker and you want to find your people, they are a beautiful community of women that are supportive. And then I also teach courses in daily planning for ADHD moms and time management mastery for ADHD moms. So one is like a short program, like a short course that you can watch the videos and implement pretty quickly. And the other one is an 11-week program where we go through, like, how do we create a routine that makes sense for you and for your family? And then also then how do we have the ability to adjust that as your kids grow and seasons change and you're going from summer to school or school to summer and dropping naps? Like, how do we grow with our family and still keep that, like, base layer of organization without wanting to poke our eyeballs out with forks because we're bored and you know, the word routine makes our skin crawl. Like, we're making this to fit you and your brain and your family. So
there's a lot of freedom in routine. People are afraid of routine sometimes, I find, because they don't want to be, like, trapped or, like, stuck with something that they can't be flexible with. And I think it's with more, actually, it's less specific routine and a rhythm of life that's really predictable for you and for your kids. And the more there is a predictable rhythm of life that can adjust for different stages of development for your whole family, the more you actually have a lot more freedom to have the times, because we build in all the downtime you need. We build in the fun. Because a lot of the high achieving moms are not the fun moms. Like, I'm not a fun mom. I wish I was. It was actually a New Year's resolution of mine at one point. Literally wrote down, be a more fun mom. Can you imagine?
No, I mean, I'm the same way of a lot of us who were the high achieving perfectionist kind of types. Like, we have trampled down that fun side of us because we didn't know how to do both. Because we are people, like we talked about, like, we're people of both ends of the spectrum. And so we either know how to be super structured and consistent. I hate that word, consistent. And we're doing all the things and we're following all the rules, or we're footloose, fancy, free, and fun. And we feel like we can't, like, find a balance between the two. And there's a middle ground that we can find. But yes, the more structure you have, it actually creates the freedom there, because you're not stressed about the laundry that didn't get done because soccer's tomorrow and you have to have the uniform for the championship game. Like, all that stuff just weighs on you. So the more that you can create automation and ease around the things that have to get done as a mom, the more that you have space to be like, you know what, we are going to go just randomly craft store and buy a thing to make a volcano today because I know that I can, and I don't feel guilty or stressed about it. And I'm not up till 3 a.m. washing the soccer uniform.
Maybe that's what we do on Thursday afternoons. Like, you know what I mean? Like maybe Thursday afternoons is our free time to go explore the town or the city and go tootle around in the dollar store or the craft store or whatever, because that's actually built into a rhythm of life for us. So we don't have to wait until we hit the wall and we're exhausted and we're starved for that kind of creative play, free space, because it's actually built into our life to have that time.
Yeah. Because when we like purposefully try to be so on point because we feel like everything's out of control and we try to like put a tight rein on everything, that's actually where things start to fall apart, because then the fun side of our brain is gasping for air. And then that's how we end up on this like rabbit hole and end up guilt tripping ourselves into getting off track because we didn't create space for that.
Yeah. And then life happens and throws something extra onto our plate that makes us drop the whole plate. And then we hit the wall and the overwhelm, which I think we both talk about in our respective content that both of us share. We both talk about a lot of the same things. So that's really neat to see that.
Yeah. And we also plan for those emergencies, because as much as we want life to be this like ideal day where everyone eats home cooked meals and, you know, unicorns fly by and all the glorious things happen and no one throws up, like that's not realistic as a mom. So we also know, like we talk about, how do you have your like basic plan for like when the doo-doo hits the fan? If all of a sudden you did end up at the craft store buying volcano supplies on Tuesday, okay, we know how to rearrange things so that everything still gets done. It's like we're building things to fit your brain instead of trying to shove your brain into the chore chart with the stickers. So.
Okay. Thank you so much for being here. I want to ask you one last thing.
Of course.
For you, and it'll be a personal question, I guess. So for you, when you look back over the whole journey that you've experienced, what do you think has been the biggest gift about yourself that you've kind of learned that maybe you didn't know before diagnosis?
I think in what I've learned in the last 40 years is that I was made this way for a reason. Like, I'm not broken. You're not broken. You are worthy of support. You deserve to be happy in your life the way that you are. And that when we lean in to who we are, there's so much beauty in how we can create a life that makes sense for us and use all of our strengths to make the world a better place. And it is possible. It is possible to have a life that you love with ADHD when you have the support there to do it.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that.
You are so welcome.
It's wonderful.
I also realized in all my yammering, I don't think I actually said the website, which is motherhoodandadhd.com. I said a lot of stuff. Don't think I actually told people where to go.
I think you might've said it. Anyway, I'll link it. I'll link it for sure. So all your info will be there. Thanks.
That's the beauty of talking with people with ADHD when you're like, I'm not sure if I said this. And they're like, I'm not sure either. Yeah. We'll make sure it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's it for today, my friends. We hope you enjoy being a fly on the wall for this one. Leave me some messages through the page, on Anchor, if you have any questions that you want follow-up on, and please check the show notes for all the relevant links that we did discuss today. If you like the show, please like and share it. Share it in your social media, tag us, Dig a Little Deeper Therapy, and that kind of lets us know that we should keep doing this, and it will help the podcast show up in all the places that you do listen to podcasts. Until next time.
For more resources, classes, and community, head over to my website, motherhoodinadhd.com.